Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, the heart of the island's community.
You're listening to Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, and online. Welcome to the For Women by Women show, sponsored by the Tampon Tax, administered by the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Community Foundation. I'm Maggie.
I'm Kitty.
And we shall be introducing you to women who are experts in their fields with the aim of informing you what to look for, what is out there, how to get help, etc., on various topics. Today in the studio is Fran Collins from Red Funnel, and she'll be talking about her career on the sea. Welcome, Fran.
Thank you.
What we like to ask our guests is to give our listeners an outline of their career to date, their expertise and their experiences. Would you be able to do that for us?
Yes, of course. I think so all of my experience really has been in the Merchant Navy. At the age of 16, when I was at grammar school and intending to do a bunch of A-levels, it didn't seem particularly appealing. And I saw an ad in the paper and it said, "See the world with Shell." So I wrote off and they sent back a glossy brochure with pictures of Sydney Opera House and icebergs and things that you probably don't really want to see if you're in the Merchant Navy and on ships. And it seemed like a good idea to apply. So I applied for what is essentially an apprenticeship, a cadetship, and I was taken on as an officer cadet by Shell. Having spent a lot of my life living in a small village in Devon, you can imagine it was a bit of a shock to go to South Shields in Tyneside to college, where I did the best part of 6 months pre-sea training and then joined a super tanker for my first ship.
Super tanker?
Wow. Yeah, it's probably not quite as exciting as it sounds. It's they're these huge, huge ships. I joined a ship in Le Havre in France, which wasn't the most exotic place, and then spent 4 months sailing very slowly around to the Arabian Gulf, where that was my end of my 4 months, and I came home. And I did a succession of 4 to 6 months contracts, learning everything about ships and how they operated. And because I did a combined cadetship, I was a deck officer trainee and an engineering officer trainee. And that started from everything from chipping paint off the deck and putting new paint down to learning how the bridge system worked, how to navigate and drive the ship effectively. And from an engineering perspective, how to do that. And that takes about 4 years at that point to qualify and to do your final exams. And then I qualified in 1997 as a junior officer, effectively, having sailed at that point around the Caribbean, out in the Far East, the Middle East. And then that became my career for the next few years.
What, still in super tankers or other boats?
All in tankers, everything from very small product tankers. So I worked on some 1,500-ton, I think about 80 metres long tankers around the north coast of Scotland in the middle of winter. So that was quite an experience, not always pleasant. everything up to the super tankers, 380,000 tons, sort of 350 metres in length. So I had a really wide spread and geographically everywhere. I spent a lot of time in Singapore and Hong Kong, Malaysia, lots of time in the Arabian Gulf, obviously, and then out in the Caribbean. It was quite good fun. And the west coast of the States as well.
How lovely. Are they difficult to park, these, or berth, isn't it, these huge super tankers?
The super tankers, a lot of the time you don't actually go into port. You just go to a single buoy mooring off a port. And then at some times you can be a long way off the coast. And there'll usually be a pilot who is an expert that will come out and help you do the manoeuvring. But generally, I think with ships, it's like parking your car, but the pavement moves or the pavement stays still and the road's moving slightly. But generally with vessels, you've always got a plan. And you know what you expect to happen, but as long as it follows the plan, some days the ship will effectively park itself and other days it does feel like a bit of a battle. But women can park just as well as men, that is what I would say.
Sure they could. Yes, I wasn't questioning your expertise. So where did you go from there?
Well, once I'd been sailing for quite a long time and I was working at that point, I did some cable laying ships and cable repair ships. And then in around about 2000, that industry plummeted and there was a big shift away from subsea cables into satellites. So the industry took a big hit. And at that point, I'd just been made redundant. And then I got ill and I lost my medical for a year or so. So I did a bit of typing and to get some cash in. And then I did some tyre fitting because tyre fitting paid more than typing at the time.
How exciting, tyre fitting.
So me, it was definitely
a
very useful skill. Exactly. And I did, you know, regular cars and tractor tyres and things. And for a little bit, I did think about maybe that would be my new career choice. But I got my medical back And then I went to work for a six-week contract for a South Coast ferry operator, Condor Ferries. And I went to work for them as chief officer, so I was the second in command on the high-speed ships. And then they liked me and I liked them, so I stayed and ultimately got promoted to captain on their ships, which was great fun. You know, I think that's high-speed ships. I was having a ball zooming around the channel. It was really, really good, and it was a really nice company to work with. And then the then general manager asked me if I fancied coming ashore for a bit, and I said to him, no thanks, I like driving ships, I'm having a great time out here. And bless his soul, he talked me into it for a period of 6 months, and that was, having come ashore, you see a whole different side of how a company operates.
Yes.
I came ashore, and then subsequently I was promoted to operations director. Then I did a commercial role, and then finally executive director for operations. And it was, I think there's a, when you're on the ship and you're the master, you have, everything is very instant. You have command. You know what you've got to do. Everything is immediate. The consequence is immediate. It's a level of expertise that's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
When you're managing a business, the scope is so much wider, mm-hmm. and you're making a lot of decisions based around slightly grey areas, really, because what's the long term? What I do now is going to have an impact into the future, and being very aware of that is critical from a shoreside management side of things. And I discovered, since I came ashore, how much I love the strategic side of things.
Right.
And I've always liked working with people, and building a team is quite a corny way of saying it, but I love to have a team of people that work together, that challenge one another,
yeah.
that are feisty, but it's never personal, and it comes out with the right outcome for the business for the longer yes. term. And having that same value set is critical. So I think having come ashore into that, that was something that was a real... an asset of my life that I never thought I would tap into, and I was able to discover.
That's good. So do you miss whizzing about in the boats?
Oh, yeah. I keep my master's licence current, and I've been offered by some of our masters at Red Funnel have very kindly offered me a shot on the sticks. But it was definitely... it was the best bit of the job. But I do miss it on the nice days when I'm out there and it's a bright sunny day and a flat calm and it's a lovely day. When it's blowing old boots and you can't see and the visibility's poor, that's a tough job. You know, I think that's no master ever cancels a sailing lightly.
No.
But that is a tough job, and I've got every respect for our guys and masters and our crews who are doing that, because on a bad day it's tough.
I'm sure it is tough. Yes. Do you see many differences between working in the Merchant Navy and at Red Funnel?
Well, I think one of the things I would say with Red Funnel is, because a lot of the Merchant Navy crews will be multinational crews, we have a lot more women at Red Funnel, which by the nature of being a coastal operator makes it easier for women to come ashore and maintain a family life. I'd say Red Funnel's got a very family feel about it. It's a lot less corporate than some of the other companies I've worked for, which is one of the things I really love about it.
Thank you. I wanted to ask you a question about working as a woman in a male-dominated historical role.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those interesting questions, because I don't know any different. Mm. But I would say I've had a lot of support through my career. There have been difficult times, for sure. But shipping, I think. First of all, when you're on a ship, there are very few people as part of the crew. So generally, when you go out there, if you can do your job and you fit in, then I found acceptance is fairly easy to come by. There's clearly been some people who have either taken the wrong end of the stick or who've been less accepting. But there's a balance between saying, okay, if you're just going to parachute women into something that's completely not been in there, you can't expect it to be magic straight away. Mm. And my dad said to me when I went away, he said, you know, just remember, you are going to have to modify your behaviour slightly, because that you've got to change as well as the industry's got to change. And I thought that was actually quite an interesting and really helpful way to put it. And I do some work at the moment with women in shipping. And one of the things we're working on is how we can help other companies. It's an international maritime organisation initiative, but how we can help companies prepare ships for women joining. And, you know, silly things like when I joined, there were no sanitary bins on a ship. So you've got... what do you do with waste?
Absolutely.
How do you get sanitary products? And I think, I would hope we've moved on a long way, but we have moved on, particularly from a Europe aspect. But there are other companies more widely afield that don't have women in there, and the culture for women is not to go to sea. And unfortunately, the merchant navy in general is quite a contracting industry. So we do need to try and make it attractive to people to come away.
Thank you. And do you think that the momentum's changing in terms of women being treated as equals in the industry?
There's definitely a big drive for it. And I would say that overall now it's becoming more normal. You know, at Red Funnel at the moment, we have on our out of our seagoing staff, we're over 25% female now, which is fantastic in an industry that's historically around about 3 to 4%. It's becoming, when things become normal, I don't think we'll ever get to a 50-50 gender split just by the nature of what we do and who wants to go away to sea, and potentially in some companies spend up to 4 or 5 months or more at a time away. But as things become normal, it becomes less of an issue, and you're never going to change some people who just have outdated views.
That's true.
The majority of people are actually quite supportive.
And do you think also that attitudes towards women in business are changing in terms of being a chief exec, for example?
Yeah, I mean, I think in some cases it's actually been tougher coming ashore. Certainly the assumption coming ashore is very different to on the ship. On a ship, I can say, oh, I've got a master's license, and that gives me credibility. Coming ashore, and recently I was actually up at the horrible name drop here, up at the House of Commons, and I was with my CFO, and I won't say who it is, but one of the ministers said, and what do you do to the CFO? And he said, I'm the CFO at Red Funnel. He said, what about you, my dear? And I said, oh, I'm the chief exec. And he was like, oh, really? Oh, well done. Well done, you. And I was a bit sort of, well, yes, well done me. But he was really quite surprised by the fact. I think he thought I was going to be the CFO's other half or something along those lines. And
or the assistant.
Yeah. And it's that. By the same token, though, I think, again, that's what has historically been in business for a long time. Can we blame people if that's what they default to? And it's really interesting. You know, you and I were chatting just a second ago, Maggie, about the self-challenge is how much do we almost self-discriminate and discriminate with that unconscious bias that, you know, if you think of a pilot, do we think of a male or a female, or do we just think of a person? It's really hard, isn't it?
I mean, some of it's conditioning from childhood, isn't it? As a result, that's probably what some people's mindsets are coloured by, but it's great to see women doing more things in the world and taking charge and breaking through the glass ceiling.
Yeah, and have I been lucky that I don't think I've encountered the glass ceiling yet. And, you know, the fact that I'm CEO at Red Funnel, and fundamentally, when I look at my career path, if you'd said to me at 16 when I left school, would I end up as the CEO of a big business? I think I'd have been quite surprised by that. So, but generally now, I think there's a big move away from whether it's any form of discrimination, that actually people just want to have people in their businesses that can do the job.
Absolutely.
And deliver. And I think we are seeing that shift, certainly on a corporate level. We're starting to see when that side of things that people are, they want to say, okay, we want capable, competent people. And the fact whether it's age, gender, particularly gender or sexuality or any of those things are becoming much less of a focal point.
Yes.
And I think the media pressure on that has been very helpful.
That's right though, isn't it? Because you've earned your space. Absolutely. And the thing is, it's about being valued for your role as a woman in society, isn't it? As well as being valued for your role in your career.
Yeah, I think that was another interesting point around this. The woman's role in society is fascinating, and how does having a career fit alongside, for example, having a family? For me, I knew when I was a child that children weren't ever going to feature on my radar. I've got nieces and they're great, but I'd like to be able to give them back. But
I can understand.
Yeah. Do you think, could I do what I do now if I had a family? And I think I would find it hard, if I'm really honest. I think there are a lot of pieces around it, and this point around where women have to take time out to have children, and I think that the way some parts of industry penalise on that is outrageous, frankly. There will always be a point where if you have to take time off, you've got to refamiliarise. But one of the examples I give is that for the Merchant Navy, the amount of sea time you're required to do to revalidate your licence, if you have, I think it's either 2 or 3 children in the space of 5 years, you can't get the sea time to revalidate your ticket. And I know that the MCA is looking very closely with IMO and what have you to see how that can be rectified. But that's just an inherent discrimination.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the system needs to be changed, frankly.
Yeah. And it is the same across certain other professions as well.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of what is it? It's sort of subliminal almost. It's, or is it accidental discrimination? It probably is, but it's still needs to be addressed.
Almost historical, isn't it?
Yeah, it probably goes right back to caveman days for some reason. And I think we're so lucky in our part of the Western world with what we have got and the freedoms we've got, when certainly with some of the international side of things where life is different. And, you know, I've had some, when I was out in Saudi Arabia and I worked out there, I was very careful to make sure I kept myself appropriately dressed, but I never had any issue with discrimination from the staff, the Saudi guys that came on board. It was a very interesting balance, but I think had I been a Saudi woman, life would have been very different.
Mm. Yes, that's because they're only just learning now, aren't they? That they can do things, the Saudi women. They've only just been allowed to drive and stuff like that.
And it is about equality in some cases, isn't it? Because equality across the world means different things to different people.
Yeah, I suppose equality anywhere is, and what is true equality for me? I'm very much around equality. Is around, we should, anyone, if you, somebody wants to do something, we should make sure they have the opportunity to do it. For me, it's about opportunity and making people aware of the opportunities and allowing people the choice. I'm not a big fan of quotas, if I'm honest, but it's making, saying to people, this is an option, you may like to consider it. These are the upsides, these are the downsides. If you want to choose this, we'll support you. And I think just providing that level, you know, we went through that piece perhaps in the 80s where it was women should have it all and you should have a family and you should have a high powered job, and God, it would kill me doing that. I don't think I wouldn't have the time or the energy.
You've got to have the big shoulder pads and
yeah, exactly. And your point about the big shoulder pads, there's a whole point around the dressing side of things. You know, if you go to a function, it's dead easy for a chap to say, oh, I'm going to put on my tux and go, but for a woman, we're having to buy another dress.
You're not allowed to wear a tux?
I've never tried wearing a tux, actually.
We were just talking about that last week, actually.
Yeah,
it's an interesting concept, isn't it? Because these days, you know, women wear a lot more, ladies wear trousers all the time and don't very often wear skirts. And, you know, it is the freedom. We're very lucky to have the freedom to be able to do that.
Yeah, freedom. You know, and I think that's the big change as well. You know, what do we wear? What shoes do we wear? By the same token, I think a woman will always be slightly more judged on her appearance, perhaps, than a man, to an extent.
Do you not have a dress uniform?
There's a Merchant Navy uniform, yeah, and that's...
You not have a dress uniform at Red Funnel?
Not for me as CEO, but we have an official uniform, which is the Merchant Navy uniform, which is either trousers or a skirt, a black trousers or skirt, and then a uniform jacket with braid on it.
So could you not wear that to an official do?
I could do, but I think I wouldn't want to take away from our masters who are doing it every day, to be honest. I think my days of wearing that, probably, I'm not sure I'd still fit in it, to be honest.
And feeling valued and safe in your role is obviously key to what you do. What parts of your current role do you currently enjoy most?
The people side, which is, everybody always says the people, but I was just saying earlier to Maggie, you know, Red Funnel's got this great family atmosphere. I like these small, slightly quirky companies. And when I first came to Red Funnel in June 2018, everybody was really welcoming. Everybody took time to talk to me. They tell me the good side, the bad side. If we're talking with staff or sending communications out to our colleagues, they will come back to us and they tell us what they like and what they don't like. And it's the same for our passengers. You know, Maggie said to me about the customer complaints, but actually we get lots of compliments. And I don't tend to take them personally, but we take them personally as a business, so we can say, did we deserve that? What did we get it wrong? And I really like that, because our colleagues, the staff, they've got this great desire to get it right. So I can say to people, I don't know, I can't think about this right now, just do the right thing. And I would say Red Funnel generally always does the same right thing. So we don't always get it right, but everybody has a huge desire to do so, and that's really empowering.
That's good.
Being a female in such a male dominated industry and having so many females within your company, do you find that sort of changed the company a little?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Red Funnel's always had a history of having a larger number of women in the business. I think I'm quite well known through our industry now, and in some ways that's probably, having been female, that has given me a bit of an advantage, because I'm well known, you know, perhaps more so than guys, because I have a discriminating feature. Whether that's right or not, different question, but you can't really change what you've got.
I'm going to have a little break now.
Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, your station, your community.
Welcome back to the Four Women by Women show on Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. In the studio today is Fran Collins from Red Funnel, and we're talking about her being at sea and her career, etc. What I'd like to ask you now is totally nothing to do with the sea, but with horses. Oh. You have horses and you do show jumping, and how did you start to do that? Did you just suddenly find a horse one day and jump on it? Or?
My mum put me on a donkey when I was about 18 months old, apparently, and I somewhat refused to get off, I gather. And then I was quite a busy brains child, so she sent me riding at the age of about 3 and a half, and it became a passion that's stayed with me my whole life. I've managed, even through my career at sea, I've managed to either ride other people's horses or keep them in the background. And now I have 5 horses, which I keep at home, and which obviously takes up a fair bit of time, but I think that's so important to have that downtime. It's headspace.
I think it is, yes, because it must be quite challenging to keep on track on everything when you're at work and then go home and switch off.
Yeah, I think that's I live in Dorset, so I have a fair drive to get home, which I quite like. The drive gives me a chance to wind up, and in the evening wind down a little bit, but also it allows me to think about all of the blocks of the day, because as the CEO, obviously one of the things you tend to do is you're always thinking strategically for the business, but you're also dealing with the day-to-day bits that come up. So making sure you can slot the day-to-day bits into the long-term strategy is critical. But when I go home and I've got horses to look after, I suppose in a way it would be like having children in that they have needs to take care of.
Yeah.
And they're quite sensitive creatures. If you're stressed, they'll be stressed. So yeah, you literally have to drop whatever it is you're thinking about at the door when you go to deal with them. And I find it's good exercise and stops me having to go to the gym, but it really does give me that headspace to just be able to let the back of my brain do what it needs to think about while the front of my brain is thinking about either riding or caring for the horses.
So do they come and greet you as you get to the fence? Or?
Yeah, one of them is quite needy and she'll always be there. One of them doesn't like to be caught, so there's usually a little bit of a battle of wills for her. But I've had her a long time. I've had her since she was a young horse and she's now 16, so we have an agreement. It's in a funny sort of way, you know, if you look at the personality management styles, I practice with horses because yes, they've all got their different personalities.
So do they get seen to in a particular order? Do they have a hierarchy amongst themselves?
Oh, there's a huge hierarchy. I mean, I could go into this for hours. There's the horse that's actually in charge is an old mare, and she's in charge, but she lets her number two do all of the delegation work. And the number two horse is the one that's always going around making sure the others are all kept together and everyone stood where they should be. But
delegation.
She delegates, but the big old horse, she'll only get involved when she really needs to. And then there's
very sensible.
Yeah, there's always a skirmish at the bottom where I have a pony who is at the bottom of the pile who's generally like a terrier and causing mayhem actually with the others. But sometimes I'll sit up in the field and watch them interacting with each other, and it you know, it's like I say, I could go for it for hours with the way the horse psychology works, but yeah, how they interact. One of the things I would say with horses is that they're very quick about what they do. They react and then they forget about it. They never bear a grudge. So when you watch them working together as a herd, something will come up, one of them will be disciplined, and then that's it. It's all forgotten about. And there's an interesting parallel sometimes into management.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't take it personally.
That's brilliant, isn't it? Yeah, lovely. And you have some cats, I hear, some Maine Coons.
Yes, I've got 2 Maine Coon cats, big ginger furry guys, and then 3 regular moggy cats. Mm-hmm. And I also have 5 sheep, if we're confessing the level of
please do, yeah.
Yeah, 5 sheep as well.
And are the sheep pets or?
Yeah, I mean they are effectively pets. I got them because they're good for weed control, but I've got Vivian, Verity and Victoria, and then I've got another 2 which are Leonard and Alice, which I inherited from a friend. So they are pets because they have names.
And they do come when you call them. If you call the sheep and shake the bucket,
they're there. Yeah. They do tend to eat fields, though, very quickly, don't they?
Yeah, that's what I like about them, is I can use them for eating the weeds down in some of the fields. And
I read something somewhere recently, and it was a book by Sheryl Sandberg, in a book that she wrote back in 2013, suggested that women have to work harder, strive more, network like crazy and take bigger risks to have the place at the top Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think generally women do have to do we have to be better? I think that you feel obliged to be better. And I think I'm lucky, you know, I know a lot of very successful women who are reaching the top of in their careers. And I would say all of them are experts in what they do. None of them are casual or calm about having got there. They make sure they're the best they possibly can be. And I wonder if is that because we feel we have to be, or is that why we're doing what we're doing because that's our natures? And I don't know which, you know, it's that sort of nature nurture side of things. So I'm not sure on that. In terms of networking, I mean, personally, I hate networking. I like to go and talk to people. I find people interesting. I don't like networking for the sake of networking.
No.
I think LinkedIn.
I agree with you.
Yeah, LinkedIn is a modern evil, necessary evil in many cases, but it's not. Networking as a thing, I think, is quite a masculine 80s piece. But going around chatting to people, one of the things I think is also have seen a big change in the last 5 or 10 years over is that networking events historically tended to be things like golf or that, quite male dominated now. And I think we've seen a shift away from that to things that are a little bit more inclusive. Because, you know, if you go back to the 80s, wasn't it, if you didn't play golf and you were male, then you wouldn't be.
No, then you're nobody.
Yeah. We have seen a big shift in that way.
And also, have you noticed any negativity from other females within organisations in terms of your being a CEO?
I've not noticed any of that. And I think I'm aware that that's a perception, or it's a recognised piece. And I think I've been so lucky in my career. I've generally met, whether it's male or female, really supportive people. There's been the odd unpleasant incident. There's been the odd person who's been negative, but generally as a whole, from male and female perspectives, and probably certainly I can't think of an issue with another female, it's overwhelmingly positive. And there are always going to be challenges. I sailed with one captain who was a Norwegian chap. I joined the ship and he said, I'll be very frank with you, he said, I don't like tall people and I don't like women. I'm 5'10" and female. I was like, wow, I'm a bit stuffed, aren't I? And to be fair to him, though, he may not have liked those traits, but I never felt discriminated against. And by the end of the trip, he wrote me a glowing appraisal. And it was, you know, I didn't have any issue with it, but he was very upfront about his views.
And I guess that was direct, really, because he's actually articulating his, you know, his views. And that's not going to colour the way that you do your job. But it's great that he gave you a brilliant appraisal.
Yeah, and I never felt discriminated against from him. He was very clear about what he thought, but two factors I really couldn't control were his deciding, I thought, of all the things I can change, those are not two I can do anything about. But I don't know, discrimination's a hard one, isn't it? Because a lot of it is, it's not overt. A lot of it is under the radar. And do I know if I've been discriminated against? Well, I think my career trajectory shows that in the main, not. Mm. But I dare say, I mean, there's always, and the other thing I would say is there's always gossip. You know, people will always try and, if you are female, people always use gossip against you. So if you, whether it's sexuality, whether it's going for lunch with someone, you know, part of my job sometimes is going for lunch with people. And then I find, oh, so-and-so, she was having lunch with so-and-so. Seriously? And it's very damaging, you know? That's the...
When I, they make up scenarios, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, I had at a previous company, I had a member of staff who worked for me who had the same surname. And the fact that Collins is a common surname, and that we had to take some action to get a rumour that was being pushed through quelled, because people were jumping to huge conclusions on things, and it wasn't so much that it affected us, but this guy had a family. Mm. You know, I think that's that is something that does come up for women.
Yeah.
Mm. And what advice would you give to young women nowadays in terms of developing their careers?
Be yourself is the most important thing of all, is being genuine and be yourself. Because the thing, I think it takes a while for us, you know, when you get to that point, and when I was in my 20s, I thought, well, you know, everyone always says this, but it's true. When you get to your late 30s and 40s, you suddenly realise that what you are is actually okay. You're fine as you are. You don't need to be anything different. And if you want to do something, go ahead and do it. Don't listen to the people that tell you might not be able to, or because everybody judges your situation by their values or their background. I say everyone judges your overtake by what they're driving.
Yes.
And you have to assess the feedback, but make your own decision. If your heart says do this, what have you got to lose? Never be scared of failure. Because we're in a world now, and I get quite excited about this, we're in a world now where if you look on Facebook and YouTube, we see all this success, but we never see the hard knocks that goes behind it.
No.
And you have to make mistakes, and you have to get it wrong to learn.
Of course you do.
And we're not necessarily always aware of all of the bits that go behind on that. So it is okay to get it wrong. Pick yourself up, dust yourself down, have another go. But I think being true to yourself and your values... And take, I suppose it goes back to your point about taking a chance. Yeah, take a chance.
And if you've made a mistake, say, I've made a mistake and put it right.
When you're looking at a situation and it feels enormous, would you be worried about, what were you worried about this time last year?
Yeah.
And generally, you can't remember. It's only the real life-changing things that you were worrying about this time last
year.
And if you can focus your mind into, okay, this might feel enormous now, but actually, in a year's time, it probably won't be.
No.
Then it helps you make a much more objective decision.
Sometimes it's even a month's time. Will it matter?
Yeah, exactly. And generally, actually, what you do now has a long. It'll have a big impact, but you can change your life. And I think when I was 16, 18, I didn't realise that actually I made a set of life choices at 16 or 18, but they were easy to change. I could have changed those at any point through. Some things, obviously, families and the like are a little bit more binding, but certainly what you pick early on isn't going to have huge impact later in life. You have that power in yourself to change.
You certainly do. Have you ever seen the film Captain Phillips?
Yes, I have.
Have you ever been anywhere near a situation similar to that with the pirates?
Yes, I was on a ship going to scrap in Bangladesh. So we were anchor off the scrapyard, and it was in a piracy area. And I suppose it must have been about, I'm trying to think back now, it must have been about 4 o'clock in the morning, half four in the morning. I was on there as an engineer, and I was doing the 12 to 4 watch. And I'd gone on the bridge to have a coffee with the second mate because he was Canadian, and we were basically Filipino crew. We had a couple of British officers. So what we used to do is we'd all gather on the bridge and go for a coffee after our watch. And we were anchor off Bangladesh, and then the watchkeeper called on the radio and said, I'm coming back, we've been boarded. We had fire hoses all rigged around. And he said, they've got big bowlers. And we were like, what's a bowler? And it's a massive knife.
All right.
So not as dramatic as the Captain Phillips with no machine guns. These guys had boarded the ship. Our watchkeeper ran down the deck, and we barricaded ourselves in the accommodation block, and we put fire hoses off over the bridge front, and the pirates took all the mooring ropes off the folks, all stole a load of paint. But when they tried the doors into the accommodation, first they got through the fire hoses, and then they couldn't get in anyway, so they left us alone. But it was quite exciting for a bit.
Was it a bit scary?
It didn't feel scary at the time. It felt a bit surreal, to be honest, because we drilled for it and we'd practiced. And I think one of the things with, like any military or quasi-military thing, you do so much training and so much preparation that when something like that happens, you just go into the system.
You go into the mode.
Yeah, into the zone, and we were all in the zone. And then I think we thought, foolishly, we thought it was quite funny afterwards, but obviously with hindsight, and we were lucky because these guys, they were armed, but they weren't armed with guns or anything like that. It's a massive issue, though, with the piracy still.
I'm sure it is. Yeah, it must be very scary. I don't think I'd like it.
No.
We don't get it on Red Funnel, do we?
No pirates recently.
No.
I'll reserve that one, but no, nothing recently.
That's good. Well, we've come to the end of the For Women by Women show on Vectis Radio, FM 104.6. Thank you for listening. Thank you to our expert, Fran Collins.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's a pleasure. If you'd like any more information about the topic discussed today, please email Maggie at vectisradio.fm with your name and what you'd like to know, and I can put you in touch with one of our experts. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Your support matters. We operate thanks to the support of local businesses. If you would like to advertise on Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, contact our team today. Marketing at vectisradio.fm.